Good morning, and welcome to Word of Mouth, the program where captivating people talk about their unique jobs. I'm your host, Jim Wunderlich, and today I'll be chatting with John and Mary Jo Tenuto, award-winning sociology professors from the College of Lake County for 16 years. John Tenuto is the co-author of Social Movement Theory and Research. His research on how Star Trek was made despite social and cultural limitations has been featured in the Chicago Sun-Times, BBC Radio, and WGN News. Mary Jo also teaches for Southern New Hampshire University's online program and created the first online deviance class for CLC. She frequently presents lectures to community groups about the connection of domestic abuse and media. Both John and Mary Jo are avid fans and experts of the fictional character, the Lone Ranger. John and Mary Jo, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, much to talk about. You guys have so many interests, but let's start with the Lone Ranger, who originated 80 years ago on radio station WXYZ in Detroit in 1933. How were the Lone Ranger and Tonto created? What's their history? It's just fascinating.
Well, the Lone Ranger is unusual in that it was really created by a group of people. The history isn't as clear as, say, something like Star Trek, how that was created,
okay. Or
the character Superman we know that was created, you know, by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. But there are three people that are primarily deserve credit for the creation of the Lone Ranger. One is a man by the name of, mainly a man by the name of George Trendle, who was initially a movie theater owner. He created the Alger Theater in Detroit, and he was very successful in that industry. But he sold that off, and I believe to Paramount. And in 1929, him and his partner bought a radio station named WGHP, and then changed that to WXYZ, which was the last word in radio. That was the idea.
Okay.
And they were part of the CBS or Columbia Broadcasting System, so they received all their nighttime programming. But he felt that they needed to, that there might be more profit and it might be more of a worthwhile endeavor to make that a independent station with their own unique programming. So they split from CBS, and that was about 1932. They started to run into some trouble. It wasn't working. The station was struggling a little bit. So he gathered together a team of people, and he said, "Let's create a character, a new character. Maybe this character can help save the station." And he gave them some parameters. One was he wanted it to be a Western. He also wanted it to be a show for kids for two reasons. Kids meant merchandising.
Boy, he was ahead of his time.
And he also knew that kids were less discerning, so that they would be more willing to accept the lower production, maybe if they didn't have as much money to compete with CBS's production value. So,
or a Western from Detroit.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right, for sure. And so he... And he wanted there to be, you know, because it was going to be for kids, he wanted it to be a moral and upstanding character. So he deserves a lot of credit because he's really the one that came up with the general idea.
Sure.
The second person is
very innovative.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was.
Out of thin air in a way.
Yeah. I mean, he knew that that this character could have a future. And he also, as we'll see, knew how to bring that character to all different kinds of medium.
Right.
You know,
it starts
in radio, but then it goes everywhere.
Right, right.
The second person is a guy by the name of Fran Stryker, who was a writer. In fact, if you're a fan of Lone Ranger and you've ever seen the movie The Legend of the Lone Ranger, there's two characters in there, Lucas and Amy Stryker, who are named for him.
How about that?
And he was he wrote 156 Lone Ranger scripts every year.
Oh, my gosh.
Amazing output.
That's a lot of deadlines.
That was because it was on three times a week.
Oh, my gosh.
And they had to do it three times a day because they didn't tape it. And replay it.
So isn't this something?
So he would, you know, he would deliver the scripts literally as they were doing the episodes. And he created, he wrote a lot of the books.
Prolific.
Very good writer. And he's the one who really created that backstory we're all familiar with. Now, that was all done later, but the whole writing into Brian's, you know, gap with the six Rangers and Tonto finding him, that was all created afterwards. And then the third person is the director.
Should we talk a little bit about that? Because some folks might not be aware of what you're talking about with the Gulch and all this kind of stuff.
Sure. The general story, like all versions of characters that exist for 80 years and get reinvented all the time, things change, right? The story changes. But the general story of the Lone Ranger is that he was a ranger.
Right.
Now, in some versions...
Texas Ranger.
Texas Ranger.
Right.
In some versions, like the new movie, he's a Texas Ranger for about 5 minutes because he's a lawyer from he's an educated lawyer, and he comes wow. back. He comes back to his hometown.
Yeah, you're talking about the movie now.
The new movie has.
We'll talk about the movie later. Let's talk about the original story.
Well, the original version. Yeah. I mean,
that's more pure.
The original version. He rides with his brother, who's named Dan Reed. We never know his name, his first name. We know his last name is Reed.
Oh, I thought it was Ranger. John Reed.
That was all in. That was created in the 1981 movie.
Oh,
the first name of John. There's actually in the movie serials he has different names. So it's
Bruce Wayne was always Bruce Wayne. Wayne, right? Clark Kent. Let's get it straight, guys. Come on,
it's a complicated history. For a guy who's alone, he has a lot of names. But. So the general story is he rides with his brother after a bad guy named Butch Cavendish, one of his guide, betrays them to Cavendish.
Okay.
And all six are believed to be killed, all six of these Texas Rangers, but he isn't.
Right, right.
And the bad guys leave, and a character named Tonto, who was friends with Reed when they were little kids, finds him.
That's probably a whole backstory in itself. Yeah.
And then he nurses him back to health, and that's sort of how the story. And so Fran Stryker creates all that.
Jeez. And then what an imagination.
Yeah, and then the third person was James Jewell, who was the director for the first 5 years. He's the one who chose the William Tell
music
as the idea, because there was no royalty they had to pay. So they chose that because it was free music.
Very smart.
So, and in fact, all three of those guys also created not just the Lone Ranger; they created the Green Hornet.
I do know about that. And that's very, very interesting.
Yeah. So Brit's
all happening on a Detroit radio station.
Yeah, and Britt Reed, who's the Green Hornet, is the son of Dan Reed, who's the Lone Ranger's nephew.
Of course.
So if you saw the brand new,
who doesn't know the lineage of the Lone Ranger?
So if you saw the brand new Lone Ranger, brand new Green Hornet movie, there's a Lone Ranger poster on the wall because that's his uncle. His great uncle is the Lone Ranger.
Wow. A lot of facets to the Lone Ranger. And besides his sidekick, Tonto, there's certain things, almost motifs, the horse, et cetera. You want to talk a little bit about that, John?
Sure.
How that came about?
Sure.
Silver bullets and whatnot.
Yeah. The silver bullets, as part of the legend, John Reed and his family owned a silver mine. And
I did not know that.
And he,
I bet I'll be saying that.
And
a
that's
lot.
Where he would sort of, when he needed food or rest or whatever, he'd go back to the silver mine, which was run by an old retired ranger who knew his identity. And the reason he uses silver bullets is because bullets are precious to him. He doesn't use them to hurt people. He knows that every time he fires his gun, it has the potential to harm someone. So the fact that they're made of silver is to show that life is precious and you shouldn't take it for no reason.
So if I recall, too, he never kills anybody. He wounds them. He seems to be able to shoot them right in the hand and their gun falls down.
Yes.
At least that's what I remember from the TV series, which we can talk about later, but he always wounds them.
That was definitely a part of the character. Now, in the first few radio shows, the first few scripts that came in from Fran Stryker did have a lot of violence.
Did.
But that was pulled back immediately. They were never aired, really. Trendle said, no, that's not where we're going with this character.
Wow.
He needs to be an upright character.
Mask. We have to talk about the mask. What is that all about?
The mask is his brother's, usually seen to be his brother's vest that's taken off of him before he's buried.
Oh, my goodness.
And the two holes are the bullet holes.
Oh, my gosh.
The bullet holes that killed his brother.
Fascinating.
So, yeah.
Unbelievable. Silver, the horse. Had it from Tano had it, or what was that all about?
Well, Silver was there from the very start.
Okay.
He was there. He was named Silver from the start.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true of Scout. I don't know. Mary Jo wants to talk about Tonto a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, we can segue to Tonto. So what do we know about Tonto, his background? How did that thing come about?
One thing that's interesting about Tonto is that he was not in the first 11 episodes of the radio show. He doesn't appear until the 12th episode, and he's the idea of James Jewell. James Jewell decides that the Lone Ranger needs someone to talk to.
A sidekick. Yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right. He's the Lone Ranger, but he's not alone.
Right,
and then,
right.
And then the
otherwise,
also,
he'd be the Alone Ranger.
Right.
And that just doesn't have the same ring to it.
Right.
Yeah, the Alone Ranger. Okay, so Tonto, his horse is Scout.
No, at first, his horse is White Fella.
Of course.
And he's a white horse.
Oh.
It's not okay. Scout till later.
Okay, okay. Mm.
In fact, at first, he doesn't even have a horse.
Right.
He didn't have a horse. Did they ride?
They rode together.
Side saddle or something?
He rode behind.
Oh, okay.
He rode on the same horse. He rode on Silver behind the Lone Ranger.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else about Tonto that we... I mean, he's a man of very few words. All I remember is Kemosabe.
Right. And, well, Kemosabe is also the work of James Jewell. He picks that name after his father-in-law's camp for summer camp for boys in Michigan.
Wow.
And Kemosabe.
Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
That's something. So it's a Midwest term. It's not even from like New Mexico or
right.
the Old West.
Right. And Kemosabe means trusty scout. And,
oh, I thought it meant faithful friend.
Or faithful friend, either one.
Okay, okay.
And I'm not going to spoil it, but in the new movie...
You guys have seen the new movie then, okay.
No, we haven't yet.
Oh, okay, you've read enough about it.
We've read the story.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
But Kemosabe will have a different meaning. I'm not going to say it. I won't spoil it.
Oh, boy. What a hook. This is quite the tease.
Yeah, you got to go see the movie.
Oh, I plan on it. And Johnny Depp as Tonto. That alone is worth the price of admission.
Oh, sure.
Any other trivia that you guys can think of about that I'm missing out on?
Oh, well, with Tonto, the name does mean stupid in Spanish, but they chose the name from the Potawatomi, which is a Midwest Native American tribe, and it just means wild one.
Oh, okay. You know, the other thing, too, about I was going to say about the character of the Lone Ranger, amazing grammar.
Yes.
What's that all about? Was that intentional?
Yes.
And proper conduct, always having this almost like the golden rule all the time.
Yes, yeah. The creators wanted that. They wanted him to speak well, especially because this was a show for children.
Jeez, imagine
that. So
that
was intentional.
Yeah. Lone Ranger didn't like rap, huh? You know, the TV series became a very big hit. And as a kid, I would dress up in my Lone Ranger costume. I know I'm dating myself now. And wanted to be just like the character and actor Clayton Moore. Now, I understand you were loaned rare photographs from the family of Clayton Moore. I find that very exciting. And actually, you have in front of you a picture, which is, we're on radio, of course. But could you describe the picture? Maybe you want to talk a little bit about the loan that you got from the family and your association with the whole Clayton Moore family.
Well, sure. We had decided to do this talk on the Lone Ranger, the history of Lone Ranger, just sort of share it hopefully with a new generation of fans who might be interested in the character, but maybe not really know a lot about the character. And so we try to always make these talks special, unique. You know, we don't want them to just be a Wikipedia experience for people. Mm-hmm. So we contacted the nephew of Clayton Moore and also Clayton Moore's daughter, Dawn Moore. And we had asked permission to use some of the photographs that we had seen of theirs in various, exhibits or whatever of Clayton Moore, both in...
You know, some folks might not know who Clayton Moore is. Maybe you want a little background there, John?
Clayton Moore was born John Carlton Moore in Chicago, actually. Mm-hmm. And in the 1930s, he was he did aerobatics. And he did, he was performed at the 1934, it wasn't a World's Fair, but it was kind of a Century of Progress fair in Chicago.
Okay.
And he moved to Hollywood. He became a model and a stuntman. And he was an actor in a lot of the Republic movie series.
Yeah.
In fact, he played Zorro in 1949. And that's what brought him to the attention to do the TV show. Because Zorro was always an influence on the Lone Ranger. That's where the mask idea kind of comes
from.
Absolutely,
absolutely.
And so they cast him as the Lone Ranger in the TV show, and that becomes, I mean, he really became the Lone Ranger in real life. He lived his life. He never played another role, even though he was offered many roles. He would not play. He had no interest. As soon as he was done in 1958 with the last movie, he only played the Lone Ranger in commercials or, he'd make public appearances as a Lone Ranger. And he's the only actor on the Hollywood Walk of Fame who has his name and the character's name. It says Clayton Moore, the Lone Ranger. That's the only actor that has that.
And he became one and the same.
He became...
That's kind of eerie in a way.
Well, he did it in a way that I think was the right way.
Mm-hmm.
He you know, you hear a lot about actors, they want to distance themselves from the roles that they play.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he could, he knew the difference between himself and the Lone Ranger, mm-hmm. but he believed in the values that the Lone Ranger lived by. So he tried to live his life based on that Lone Ranger code of honesty, decency, and he succeeded. He was, for generations of kids, was not only the Lone Ranger, but he was the embodiment of the Lone Ranger.
So I love Clayton Moore. I mean, I was what you're saying about.
In the 70s, when the company took his mask away, because he would make public appearances as the Lone Ranger, they took his mask away because there was a new movie coming out. They didn't want the audience, this new audience, to be confused about, well, who's the Lone Ranger, this new guy, Clinton Spilsbury, or this guy who's in his 60s, who's the Lone Ranger?
And that's kind of nutty.
It was crazy. He got such an outpouring of love and affection. In fact,
so would he appear then without the mask?
He appeared for about 10 years with sunglasses.
Oh,
because he couldn't appear in the mask.
Okay, I think I do remember seeing pictures of that now.
And whole townships would have ordinances that proclaimed him to be the Lone Ranger all throughout
this is
California.
Wild. Wow.
He was a really great man. He was a very talented actor.
Did he cash in at all on this a little bit?
No, I mean, that
doesn't sound like he did.
Actually, he gave up money because Filmation was doing the animated version of the Lone Ranger.
Oh.
And they asked Clayton Moore and Jay Silverheels, who played Tonto on television, to do the voices. And the two of them wanted to rehearse before doing the work. And Filmation says, no, we don't do that. And he wanted to do right by the character and do it well. And so he turned that down. So he turned down what would be very easy money.
Yeah, he was paid $500 for commercials. I mean, he was never made... Yeah, he made a living at being the Lone Ranger, but it isn't like today where he would be making millions of dollars.
For the lunch boxes and all that business.
Oh, no, he never.
When
he
I had his costume, et cetera, and all everybody in the neighborhood
did. See that. In fact, he used to give them money when he would do public appearances as the Lone Ranger. He gave the company money.
Beyond a throwback.
I admire him personally.
Absolutely.
Because he really realized this character had a great potential to help, especially children.
Yes.
And he really believed in the character. So it wasn't like, you know, when he went to his kids' events and he went as Clayton Moore, he knew the difference between Clayton Moore and Lone Ranger.
Sure.
But when he appeared in public, he knew that people wanted to see the Lone Ranger. What he learned, though, about the whole situation with losing the mask was that people liked him, too.
Yeah,
he talks about that in his book, that people wanted to know
him. Oh, he has a book out.
He does have a book. It was made he passed away in 1999. The book was written, luckily, before he passed away by himself. So he, with another author, but he wrote the book, and it was written about a year before he passed away. So that was great to be able
to pick that
to get that story.
Yeah, that's terrific.
I Was That Masked Man.
I Was That Masked Man. Oh, terrific. Now, the picture, do you want to mention that a little
bit? Sure. Yeah. You know, some of the pictures that we got are wonderful because they are.
And this, again, is from the Clayton Moore
estate. From their family. Yeah. Some of them are from his memorial service. Some of them are pictures of him and Jay Silverheels just kind of being guys hanging out at their house because they were very close friends in real life.
How about that?
And then one of the pictures we have is of Clayton Moore on set, beautiful color photograph without his mask on in between scenes as they were getting ready to shoot. And, you know, you certainly can see him with his mask off in a lot of other films that he made.
Sure.
But he would never appear in the costume of the Lone Ranger in public without that mask.
You know, let's talk about Jay Silverheels. You just mentioned him and that they were very close friends. What do we know about Jay Silverheels?
He was a Mohawk, full-blooded Mohawk. Mm. In fact, his father was the chief of the tribe.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. And he was very handsome, athletic.
Yeah. Oh, very athletic, right.
And he was discovered and asked to come to Hollywood to do stunt work.
How was he discovered? Was he living on the reservation?
He was doing, he was like a lacrosse player and would do sports, and he was seen by the comedian Joe E. Brown.
Yeah, Joe E. Brown. Right, yeah.
Who took him, who said to him, you should think about going to Hollywood. You know, they were making westerns a lot, and he was very handsome and athletic, and as Mary Jo said, and he could really do both the physical work, So that's him a lot of times that you see in the show.
He did
those guys
when he jumps on the horse. That's him. That's not really a stuntman.
And that was, I mean,
the horse is already going, and he just jumps right on it. Right.
A lot of the work you see, some of it's by stunt people, but a lot of it is by Clayton Moore and Jay Silverhill.
Because he was an acrobat as well.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they both were very athletic. Mm-hmm. Anything else about Jay Silverhill you wanted to mention?
Oh, because he was athletic and talented, he then was able to transfer from doing stunt work to being an actor. And he, like a lot of other actors, like Ricardo Montalban, was put into a lot of stereotypical roles. And he did participate in the Indian Actors Workshop.
Okay.
Which taught actors, Indian actors, and worked for better roles. And he was a very good husband, very good man, just like Clayton Moore was.
Now, many people, including Native Americans, feel that the Tonto character perpetuates the fantasy of, quote-unquote, the dumb Indian.
Yes.
And now, you're sociology professors. What's your take on that? Because you already mentioned that Tonto in Spanish meant stupid.
Right, and so in Spanish-speaking countries, they call him El Toro, the bull.
The bull.
So they changed
the name.
So
it's completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What do you think about that? Because isn't that myth going to be, well, I don't want to get into the movie, really, but it just does seem over the years it's been perpetuated, and I can see where people would be very sensitive about that.
We see them as partners, as equal partners. I mean, there's episodes where Tonto saves the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, I would agree.
I as an Italian American, I understand. I mean, certainly there's a lot of stereotypes, mafia stereotypes. Italians are actually the most law abiding ethnic group in the country, and statistically, but they're almost always presented as criminals, mafia people in the big entertainments The Godfather or whatever.
Did you think it did perpetuate the myth, though, the character?
Well, I wouldn't,
because he was always subservient to the Lone Ranger. And I don't. That's a bad word, but that's what Native Americans have said.
Well, I think I wouldn't know how to read it, not being Native American, but being myself and also being a sociologist. I think if you really watch that show, considering the show's made in the 1940s,
right.
That show was very progressive. The Lone Ranger was always respectful of Tonto's beliefs, traditions, and religion.
That's true.
They were always equal partners. Did the Lone Ranger go, Tonto, go into town, and Tonto would say, me do? Yes. But part of that's because of the origin of the character in radio, because you couldn't see him. They relied, unfortunately, on the Hollywood archetype stereotype of how a Native American talks.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But when you watch Jay Silverheels, he's not only an equal partner of the Lone Ranger, he's, as Mary Jo said, he saves him. In fact, in the second movie they did together called The Lost City of Gold.
Yes, I saw that.
That is a fantastic film that is all about racism and prejudice against Native Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Tonto, I would argue, Tonto has more screen time than the Lone Ranger does in there, and he is certainly an equal. And that's not unusual for the episodes to see that. There is a dimension of that to the character because of the way he speaks, but Tonto was an expert tracker. He was never presented as stupid
on the
show. He just sounded that way.
Right, right.
Unfortunately,
monosyllabic.
Right, and so because of that, now every version after that hasn't had that. I mean, when you look at the comics, when you look at the 1981 movie, you don't see that now. The Johnny Depp version seems to be a little bit of a mixture
of
the old and the new.
Let's take a break, because I think we can talk a little bit about Johnny Depp and the new movie coming out, because I'm sure that's what people would like to hear about and get your take on that as well. We are talking to John and Mary Jo Tenuto, sociology professors from CLC. And when we come back, as you said, we'll talk more about the Johnny Depp movie and also some other things. Both of these wonderful people have done a lot of research. We want to hear about that as well. Mary Jo with the domestic abuse. And, of course, John with Star Trek. So please don't go away. You're listening to Word of Mouth. I never tire of that song. Tire of it. William Tell Overture, of course, and that's the John Morgan Orchestra. And the theme from Lone Ranger. And if you're just joining us, we're talking to John and Mary Jo Tenuto, sociology professors from CLC, and we have been talking about the Lone Ranger. And before the break, we started to talk about the new Johnny Depp movie. And maybe that segues to the question, how has the Lone Ranger changed with the times?
Well, the Lone Ranger is one of those characters like Superman or James Bond, who, which there aren't that many, actually, who get reinvented for every new generation. Mm-hmm. And so, and he's also been in all these different medias. He's been radio, stage. There's actually been stage plays. There's, you know, television, comics, animation, feature films, movie serials. And each version has a little bit of a different take on the character. That's number one part of just the creative process. The new people coming in want to put their own stamp on the character. But it's also an attempt by the Hollywood or the television industry to try to capture the zeitgeist. You know, they want the audience to watch, so they have to update the character, change the character a little bit anyway, to fit those times. That happened in the new Star Trek film, because you want to keep the heart of the character, and that's what all the versions so far has done. They've kept the core of the character, his mission, ultimately why he does what he does, why Tonto does what he does, the same through all the different versions. But there are some differences. The TV version, he was a ranger.
Right.
First in the 1981 movie, he was a lawyer who becomes a ranger.
Boy, that seems like a stretch.
He just becomes deputized because his brother, yeah. he's going to ride with his brother
right,
to go
right.
catch this bad guy.
Oh, there we go.
There's a connection. And they actually get deputized there.
I guess.
But but that changes the way that Tonto, you know, that one change, now we have to explain certain things about the character.
Right. In that film, we see Tonto teaching the Lone Ranger how to ride a horse,
how to fire
a gun.
Which is
what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's okay because it gives Tonto, you know,
I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's kind of going against what WXYZ did in 1933, but on the other hand, it does give Tonto more of a role of sorts.
Sure, and I think that's you see that in the new film too. You see that in the new film, not to give too much away, but they're borrowing elements of all the different versions.
Well, we've seen the trailers, mm-hmm. and for the most part, it looks like the Tonto movie. Because Johnny Depp is playing the Tonto character, and I don't want to give anything away, but I think the trailer's given away quite a bit of it. It looks like there's a heck of a lot of special effects, which really goes contrary to the whole Lone Ranger myth, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the heart of the
character... Simple.
We read the story and the novelization for the movie.
How'd you get a hold of that?
Well, it's out now. You can get it online.
Yeah, and get it?
You can get it. They're selling the book now.
Mm.
But
of course,
you don't want to read it unless you want to spoil the film. But
I forgot to get my Lone Ranger burger at Burger King. Doggone it!
Yeah, Subway has a whole promotion starting.
Right, right.
but you know that's necessary. I think.
Yeah.
It shows Disney's confidence in this character.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's very important that Johnny Depp is in this film because I can only imagine the pitch to Disney by the producers. We want to make a $200 million Lone Ranger film. By the way, the last film that was ever done was 1981, which was an abysmal failure. and they're like, not really. And then you say, we have Johnny Depp, and they say, oh, okay.
That
sounds like a good idea.
He's going to be a pirate, too?
But, you know, after reading the novel, it is a Lone Ranger film. Mm-hmm. Tonto is elevated, but I don't think he's any more elevated than he was in some of the Clayton Moore adventures as well. He's the storyteller. He tells you the story. They revealed that.
But he's now on equal footing, it seems.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he has his own sort of mission, but it isn't like they teach each other things. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think one of the things that is important about the film is they get that non-violence part of the character, right? In the sense of you'd only use as much force as necessary. They kept that.
Mm-hmm.
That this character doesn't seek revenge. He learns about whether or not seeking revenge is the right idea or not.
Oh, okay.
And so there is that moral heart of the character is still there.
Which since 1933, 80 years ago, that has been the heart. Yeah, the Lone Ranger. Oh, did you want to say something?
Oh, I was going to say it's also interesting with the costume change. When Clayton Moore played the Lone Ranger, you see his gun, right? It's visible.
Yes.
But in this new film, Armie Hammer's Lone Ranger wears a white coat, so the gun is hidden.
Hmm. What's that metaphor all about? What does that mean?
Well, it could also reflect the zeitgeist, the fact that there's a debate over gun control.
Very good. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, when you watch the old Cheerios commercials, I mean, the toys were guns for kids.
Right.
That,
right.
They they gave away pop guns.
Right, they gave away pop guns. Right. In fact, that was how they knew the character was popular. In May 1933, they had no idea whether the character was working or not, and they had a promotion. The first 300 kids to send in a letter would get a gun, toy gun.
Not an email.
Not an email. And they got 24,000 letters.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was the most that any a radio program had ever received before.
And they had to tell people to stop sending letters. So then people sent letters. They sent more letters.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, that little station in Detroit, how could they handle all that, too? That's just crazy. Yeah.
In fact, in July, that same year in July, they had there were three people primarily that played Lone Ranger on the radio. George Seton played him for just a few months. He would go on to write and direct Miracle on 34th Street,
right.
A whole bunch of really great films. The second person was Earl Grazer, who's the one who did the famous Hi-O Silver.
Okay, we did not talk about that yet.
Yeah, and right. The origins of that are, the original saying was hi-ho, ha-ha-ha, basically. And then he would whistle, and the horse was supposed to come. But the original actor, George Seton, couldn't whistle. So they came up with Hi-O Silver Away.
Isn't that the craziest thing?
Now, that was interesting is when Earl Grosser did it, which he died in a car accident in 1941, and the role was taken over by Brace Beamer, who had physically been playing the Lone Ranger for the station since the 30s.
Okay.
But he... his Hi-O Silver Away was used in the TV show. That isn't Clayton Moore.
Okay.
It was used in the serials. I mean, they keep using that because it's such an iconic...
Oh, it's yes.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the music we just heard.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So, and then the third person was Brace Beamer, who physically was the Lone Ranger. So in July 1933, Brace Beamer makes the very first physical appearance ever of the Lone Ranger at something called the Belle Isle Festival. And they could support 20,000 people. 70,000 people showed up to see the Lone Ranger.
Are you kidding me?
The police had to have the Lone Ranger control the crowd because people would listen to him.
He'd tell the children.
That's a
not
switch.
To.
So that's how they knew the character was popular. Those two things. So.
Well, speaking of fans, still the Lone Ranger has an active community of fans who wear costumes, write plays, I guess, go to conventions. In fact, I hope this doesn't bother you that I'm wearing a mask today. But seriously, what's that all about? With all the fans today, even started 80 years ago.
Well, the fans
and a movie, yeah. 1981. We're talking about.
Yeah,
so.
We have a theory that the culture works in 20-year nostalgia cycles. So in the 1970s, late 70s, that's why you were getting a lot of 50s. I mean, it was Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, MASH. All these things were set in the 1950s because it's generational, right? So now the parents, the people who were kids 20 years before are parents now. Mm-hmm. They want to share their childhood experiences with their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so our culture tends to be 20-year nostalgic.
Makes sense.
And so something like the Lone Ranger, luckily, is one of those characters that just gets... You know, it starts in the 30s on radio, it's on TV in the 50s, it becomes a movie and an animated show in the 70s, it comes back again now. So it gets this reinvention every 20 years or so with the character. So they...
Yeah, describe the passion of these fans.
Yeah, the fans, part of it's generational. It's very similar to Star Trek. Very, very similar.
I haven't heard about it as much as Star Trek.
No, but I mean, it's almost, I mean, there's conventions, there is online communities on Facebook, for example. There are fans who dress up in amazingly detailed, beautiful costumes.
Mm-hmm.
They put on shows even for communities at local events.
So what happens at these conventions? Have you been to one at all?
Yeah, they have a lot. Some of them are themed sort of general to Westerns in general,
mm-hmm.
and a few are themed specifically around the Lone Ranger, and they'll have actors and people who worked on the show. They'll mm-hmm. be there. They answer questions from the fans. There's memorabilia dealers. You can get autographs. It's very interesting to take a step back and to look at the fans now as this new movie is coming in, because almost all the same debates that were there with the new version of Star Trek are here in this community.
People who will not
accept new actors in the role,
mm-hmm.
people who don't have a very strong connection with the old shows. They may have, their grandparents may have shown it to them, or something like that. But they're very interested in the new movie. So you get this sort of divide, and it'll be interesting to see, will what happened in the Star Trek community happen in the Lone Ranger community? Because I think in some ways that rift not entirely has been healed by the success of the new Star Trek films.
Oh, absolutely.
And so
you bridge both, yeah, both generations.
So if this is wildly successful, it may help to bridge that. But I can see there are many fans, and I can understand their point of view, who will not accept anyone in the role other than Clayton Moore. My argument and Mary Jo's argument has been, but Clayton Moore's version was different than the Brace Beamer version, which was, everybody's version is different.
Well, Christopher Reeve as Superman, and now this new guy from England coming out with a British accent, I guess. Yeah,
Henry Cavill.
But even with Superman, there were people who were disappointed when Christopher Reeve was cast as Superman.
Oh, and because of George. Go ahead.
And the change in the clothing, the costume.
When I was thinking George Reeves, too. Yeah. If you grew up with George Reeves, and then now here's Christopher Reeve, I guess coincidentally. These characters are they've really become a part of our Americana. There's no doubt about it.
And it's interesting, they're taking a lot of the same tact with this film. In many ways,
the Lone Ranger film.
Superman film, Richard Donner's 19.
Are you talking about Superman or Lone Ranger? We got a couple of films going on.
Richard Donner's Superman, the 1978 movie. It set the pattern for how they do this kind of thing. So if you notice, they have a relatively unknown playing the Lone Ranger, but surrounded by very high quality actors, like some of the bad guys and good guys and side characters are Oscar winners and Oscar nominees in The Lone Ranger, which is what happened in Superman. You get Marlon Brando, you get Gene Hackman, right? And then you get like one really big name, which they did with Gene Hackman. And they have that with Johnny Depp.
So Johnny Depp
is there to get the bank rolling.
Yes.
And then you surround this young actor, Armie Hammer, with all these really talented, Oscar-winning, Oscar-nominated actors. And it's that same pattern that made the... Because I remember watching the trailer for the first Superman film, and the audience laughed because their idea was this was going to be like the 1960s Batman show.
Yes.
That it was going to be campy and silly. And then when people saw it, it is, I think, one of the best American films ever made is the first Superman film with Christopher Reeve.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
And the second one
isn't bad either.
I think they're using a lot of that formula for this new Lone Ranger film.
You mentioned memorabilia by the fans before. What kind of memorabilia are we talking about? What are we talking like the gun, the silver bullets? I don't really know what we're dealing with.
Yeah, everything from
the kerchief that he wore.
Yeah, from tchotchke to high end collectibles. There's everything, and there has been everything since the beginning.
This is real stuff from the radio and TV. Then
There's people who collect all kinds of things. There's people who collect the mass produced licensed products like statues, comic books, action figures. In fact, in the 1970s, one of the most popular toy lines, period, was made by Gabriel Toys, who were famous for making Erector sets. But for some reason, unexplainedly, in 1973, with no Lone Ranger on TV or in movies, not even animated, they decided to launch a Lone Ranger toy line. And
how
it was
about that?
Wildly successful, went on for almost 10 years, and was one of the best-selling boy toy lines in the 70s.
And those are very expensive today.
Yeah, to find those.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then if you go back to the 30s...
What are we talking when you say very expensive? I'm curious.
Some figures go for more than $200.
Really?
Yeah, $200 or $300, and you paid $12.99 for them when they first came out. So
crazy.
It wasn't a bad investment.
Yeah.
But he's been on lunchboxes from the 1930s on, and then there's collectors who collect high end memorabilia like the actual guns used. Used in the show.
Right.
And those,
the mask,
of course,
must be kind of a Smithsonian thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or close to it?
Yes. In fact, they do have elements of the Lone Ranger in museums. They're privately owned. They've auctioned off costumes. In fact, Dawn Moore is auctioning off some of her father's items this summer.
Oh, for charity.
For charity and for her, and for herself. And because, it's at this point, it's something that fans would really appreciate to have. Where's the stuff going to go? And, a Lone Ranger costume can go for $25,000, $30,000.
Oh, my gosh.
Or more.
Wow. I tell you, we are talking to John and Mary Jo Tenuto. sociology professors from CLC. More on the Lone Ranger, and I guess we're going to get into a little bit of Star Trek, too. Don't go away. Another song I never get tired of. That's the theme from Star Trek. And if you just joined us, we're talking to John and Mary Jo Tenuto. Most of the discussion has been on, and we've been focusing on, the Lone Ranger. We're going to turn now to Star Trek. And, John, I see you've done some research on how Star Trek was made despite cultural and social limitations. That's way over my head. What does that mean?
Well, the idea is comes actually from one of the writer and or director of Star Trek's II, The Wrath of Khan, 4 and 6, the movies. His name's Nicholas Meyer. He also did, people may be familiar with, he wrote a book called The 7% Solution that was turned into a movie.
Sure.
He also directed the miniseries The Day After. He has this idea that art thrives on limitations, so that an artist, when they're dealing with budgetary, time, special effects, any kind of cultural limitation, that actually spurs on a kind of creativity in them. Even censorship can create, force an artist to create something like Gulliver's Travels, where you make social commentary but hide it so that you don't get censored. And so, but when you have an unlimited budget, you know, you can make whatever you want, and then sometimes it becomes not as good as it could be. And so I think Star Trek is a wonderful example of a show that was produced with very little money, very little time, very little, at that time, special effects technology.
Oh, gosh, yes.
But produced what was amazing special effects and great stories. And
I loved when they'd hit an asteroid.
And they shake the ship, yeah. So what we did was we got permission from Nicholas Meyer to go into the archives at the University of Iowa, where he keeps all of his papers, and we found all the scripts and drafts and memos for the making of Star Trek II. We also found 800 photos that have never been seen before, and Mary Jo's been digitizing those,
really?
Cleaning those up. Amazing, just
that's
behind the scenes, yeah. Mm. And then we got permission to go into Gene Roddenberry's archives at the UCLA, and we've been looking at the making of Space Seed and which is the episode of Star Trek that introduced Khan, was the played by Ricardo Montalban, and then the movie that follows that, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And really looking at how all these amazing artists and writers, producers, directors, even the craftspeople, how they were able to work with these limitations to produce, you know, some really great entertainment.
Oh, absolutely. Let's talk about the TV episode for just a little bit. They say that mirrored the 60s and 70s, a lot of the episodes. Have you found that in your research at all?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Star Trek always, it's like any other entertainment. It's interesting because it's set in the future, but it's made in the present, right?
Yes.
So
that's the line.
So one of the things you could do is you could take a look at the captains on Star Trek, and they really reflect our ideas of leadership at that time, which then manifest themselves in who we elect. So what John Kennedy was dealing with a Cold War with the Russians, is Captain Kirk, young, handsome, captain, charismatic, who's dealing with a Cold War
with
the Klingons, right? I mean, it's the same idea.
Absolutely.
Captain Sisko from Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which was made in the 1990s, is a lot like Bill Clinton dealing with a multicultural world.
Jeez.
Him dealing with it on the space station, you know. Captain Picard is like the first George Bush, coalition builder, diplomat, you know. So the captains on the...
Who's the second George Bush?
The second George Bush. Well, actually, he is
a lot
like...
This is such
a
one-liner, sorry.
He's a lot like Captain Archer, who on Star Trek Enterprise, which was made in 2001, it came out actually a week after 9/11. The show itself started dealing with 9/11 themes.
Mm-hmm.
And you started to have a captain who was willing to break rules in order to save his people.
Again, the mirror image.
It's a lot about what we were going through as a culture, but always having that Star Trek message, the way we solved the crisis, the 9/11 type crisis in Enterprise, was through friendship and diplomacy.
Mm. Spock, we have to talk about Mr. Spock. What can we learn from him?
Oh, well, Spock.
Or what have you learned in your research?
Yeah, I mean, Spock is...
besides the years.
He was such a great character in the 60s because he kind of represents what was going on in the culture. The split between young and old was something that a lot of the young people that struggle that Spock goes through with his human half and his mm-hmm. Vulcan half between emotion and with logic
yeah.
is the struggle probably every teenager. But it was all very pronounced in the 1960s when people were sort of struggling with their role in society, how things were changing, all the social issues at that time. So Spock really represented that sort of alienated person, but who was functioning and doing something worthwhile and helping other people and using whatever talents he had to in the aid of other people. And so, I mean, he got more fan mail than did
William Shatner.
I mean, he was a very, well, actually the Enterprise, believe it or not, got more fan mail than any character, the ship.
More than Leonard Nimoy?
More than Leonard Nimoy.
What the ship?
What the heck?
Boy, you lost me there,
yeah,
Jen.
Yeah, but you know, people writing the ship is cool. Can I have pictures of the ship? You know?
I get you. Okay.
And but Leonard Nimoy was wildly popular. He was nominated for Emmy Awards for his acting. I mean, that character really resonated with people. And that's a duality we all face that, don't mm-hmm. we? Whether it's an ethnic duality mm-hmm. or a religious duality or having parents from two different political parties or whatever.
Yeah.
Sort of struggling with that. I think a lot of people do that.
You know, and like Clayton Moore, we were talking about him before with the Lone Ranger segment. Nimoy then wrote a book called I Am Not Spock. So he had a little different take, didn't he?
Yeah, and then he wrote a book about 20 years later called I Am Spock.
Let me clarify.
So, yeah. But it was the idea of how he felt. It emerged out of him sort of walking around maybe like in an airport mm-hmm. and someone going, there's Mr. Spock.
Right,
and him
right.
going, I am Mr. Spock, but I'm also not Mr. Spock. And him trying, the whole book is kind of an interesting discussion of how an actor deals with that kind of
he was kind of the alienated teenager.
Yeah.
The duality. I tell you, we have to talk about on Tuesday, June 25th at 7 p.m., the both of you will be talking about the Lone Ranger rides again at the Cook Memorial Library. What can we expect? And you sort of talked a little bit about that in the beginning, but anything you want to mention before we're done here?
We're going to show those photos that you mentioned.
Which you can't see on the radio, right?
Right,
right, right.
Right. And talk about the history of the Lone Ranger, the various iterations of the Lone Ranger.
Yeah, so we're going to have some memorabilia to show people.
Okay.
And we're really going to take the character through a very detailed history and how he's changed from the 30s and what that says about us, all these changes, what are those changes in the character, how do they reflect how we've changed as a culture.
Boy, I tell you, this has been so much fun. John and Mary Jo, thank you so much for being on the program today. Time just flew for me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. If you wish to see John and Mary Jo for their presentation for the Lone Ranger, you can contact this number, 847-362-2330. I'll say that again, 847-362-2330. Or you can go to the website, webres.cooklib.org. And again, that presentation will be on Tuesday, June 25th at 7 p.m. Thank you so much for tuning in. This was so fun today. I really appreciate that. And I hope you'll drop by again next Thursday morning when we have another captivating guest on Word of Mouth.